Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
It's time for the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Now, broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Del Olalea.
When the world was a time of this and that, I was young, didn't know to hold it back. Now we're here in the world, something else. We can leave any day and call for help. We were gods, nobody was above me. The A on my chest like a Dolce. The A on my chest, put your fist up. The A on my chest like a chipmunk. Alvin, Theodore, breathe in, breathe out. Me and more, breathe in, breathe out. Never mind, it was time. Number 9, let my lies be line with a death wish. Be right, didn't have no name on a guest list. Hold on, we're destined.
Yesterday, AJ walks into the control room. I'm like, oh, okay, because I don't check the grid. So I had no idea. And then I checked the grid and go, oh, Sean's with Glenn Davis. Did that happen? Were you producing the Glenn Davis show?
Yes, I was here 6 to 8.
So did you get prepped for Glenn Davis by watching the thrilling Euro semifinal between Italy, the women of Italy, and the women of Germany? I mean, of England. So you were ready to talk about that with Glenn Davis, or did he not touch on that?
He touched on that early in the show. I did not have...
You weren't prepped for it.
I didn't have opportunity to chime in. He didn't ask me.
He didn't ask you what you thought about the late England equalizer.
Yeah.
And then them winning on a missed penalty kick that they got the rebound for.
Mm-hmm,
he didn't ask you questions about that?
Yeah, absolute disaster class.
Just throw out words, throw out phrases that you've heard a soccer announcer say at some point.
Mm-hmm. I question the tactics of the Italy.
Italy's defense was at 6 and 7s.
Exactly.
Stuff like that, yes.
Well said.
Thank you. I appreciate it, whatever that might mean. I've heard that throughout the last 20 years of watching Premier League football and still don't really know what it means. At 6 and 7s, whatever it means, because I'm not looking it up. Whatever English Urban Dictionary is for English slang, I have not looked that up. But Sean's back. He did not get to add his thoughts on Italy blowing a chance to make the Euro final. We'll see who their opponent is, I guess. I may tune in today. I know Spain's playing someone. Maybe it's Norway. That's all I can take and provide to you guys. It's a big day beyond the fact that Sean's back, which is always big. He's got to come up with a list. It is list season. I don't know if he has one ready to start the show, but we will get to that. Yesterday, Sean, it was each team in the NBA's worst mistake since 2020.
Mm.
The Rockets' worst mistake, according to ESPN, was drafting Jalen Green over Evan Mobley.
That's tough. That's a tough one for Jalen Green to take on the chin.
Yeah. Now, it wasn't... It was in the 20s because they put the draft mistakes by tiers.
They ranked them? Yeah, it was only draft mistakes.
No, it was mistakes, period.
All mistakes.
But they generally put all the draft mistakes in one tier.
Okay.
So the Texans, the Rockets were 21st. I bet you can guess what the worst mistake in the last 5 years by any franchise was.
Oh, I probably can't. Oh, Luka trade?
Yes.
Okay.
And second, one that benefited the Rockets, the Suns trading for Durant and Beal.
Oh,
and
okay.
Of course, the Rockets.
Where'd Monty Williams?
I didn't see that.
Hiring Monty Williams.
I'm sure the Pistons hiring Monty Williams may have made the list, but
it's
the Pistons
top
are the
half.
But the Pistons are the Pistons, so they may have made a worse mistake because they got out of the Monty Williams thing in a year and then hired Bickerstaff, who had just been fired, and they're on their ascendancy. But the Beal Durant stuff certainly didn't help the Suns, so the Rockets used their mistake to take advantage of the Suns' mistake, and here we are. And we'll get into some Rockets news. They made a signing, which on its face is one people can go, I can't believe the Rockets have added another demon like that. And really, this guy ain't playing any playoff minutes, and I'll kind of explain why in a little bit. But it's a big day. Sean's back. We got football. We've got people reporting on the Texans starting offensive line for the first day of training camp. It's different from what we last saw of them, or at least the reporting about the offensive line. Will Kunkel, who's out there, is, you know, part of the station. He joined the station. He filled in for Paul. What was it, Monday?
On Monday, and then he and Joe will be at Cadillac Bar tomorrow.
Yes, and Will Kunkel will join John and Lance going forward, it looks like, every Friday at 8:30.
There you go.
He's always at Kilby, generally when he has the time, and he doesn't have conflicting things. He'll be at camp reporting on the Texans, so we'll have Will Kunkel on this to tell us what he's seen from the first couple of days of camp, at least John and Lance will, at 8:30. But as far as, you know, games that actually matter, the team that's actually playing games that affect the standings, they're the Astros, and they win again. They've certainly stabilized since what looked like a real troubling trend, as they were about to get swept by the Mariners until that fateful fifth inning of game three. And now they've won three straight thanks to Bryce Matthews. Once again, he hits a 2-run home run, they tack on another run, and then he makes a great play in the ninth to help start a double play, and the Astros win again in Arizona. You get Fromber doing Fromber things, and that led to a discussion this morning about Fromber and his status and why can't the Astros simply sign him. There's a story that Ken Rosenthal did that plays into a potential Fromber departure that we'll get to concerning what the Astros are going to do as they approach a trade deadline. It's not too surprising, but when you consider how they've not signed high-level free agents, at least their own free agents, maybe the Astros are going to be a bit more active and make a bit more of a defining move than we thought. You know, the rumors are adding a left-handed bat, maybe getting a reliever, but there's another potential target, at least position target, that may play into the future of the rotation that we'll get to. So they win thanks to Bryce Matthews. He's having a good time in Arizona. We'll hear from him as he echoed some comments that Christian Walker had about how the Astros clubhouse is one that allows for incoming veterans and young players to feel very welcome. So we'll get to that in a little bit. But, Sean, I was workshopping a nickname for the triumvirate of Trammell, Cam Smith, and Bryce Matthews. You have to be a bit inside baseball to know this, or at least know how baseball has operated over the last 20 years, maybe seen a commercial or two. What do you think of calling those three the RBI program?
When you paired those three guys, or I guess, you know, set those three guys apart, I was like, okay, I think I know what road he's walking down. The RBI program.
Yeah. What do you think? Now, they don't really fit because none of them came from the RBI program.
Yeah, none of them are literally products of the RBI. But
I mean,
I get it. I think it's a good nickname because I am a little, as a white man, a little uncomfortable.
And that's part of why I suggested it.
And I think a good nickname involving those three should make people like me just a little bit like, how hard should I be laughing at this?
Not sure I should ever say it.
Yeah.
Maybe that's something Dell should only say.
I definitely will not be like, big night for the RBI. Their last three wins, you can credit directly to the RBI program.
And I think, just to make it fun, I will say it quite a bit whenever those three have a big night. Because you were doing the show with Glenn Davis, and I led with talking about women's soccer in a way. If we remember back to the Olympics, the front three of Sophia Smith, what's her
name? Oh, Trinity Rodman.
Trinity Rodman, and then what's her – I don't want to say she's married to, because that's unfair. She's married to
– Danzy Swanson?
Mallory Swanson.
Mallory, yeah.
Mallory Pugh, I believe, was her maiden name. People were trying to figure out a name for them, and the play-by-play guy was going, we're going to call them the Trident because of three. And they're like, actually, call us Triple Espresso. And people are like, what's that about? And you could guess if you're really inside. Skin tone suggests that's where that came from.
I think if you have seen them,
yes.
You're like,
okay, we get it.
Okay, I see where they're going. Actually, it was the innovator of the Indiana Fever's Tres Leches.
Sure.
It's of that same vein.
Sure, yeah.
Still three of them, different drink.
Exactly.
I guess Tres Leches isn't a drink, but milk is a drink.
Understood. Understood. So that's why the three of those guys, when they play the way they've played over the last couple of days, they deserve a nickname. Probably not one that's going to catch on, just because Todd Callis can never get away with calling them that.
I want him to try, though.
Maybe Jeff Blum could. Maybe Jeff Blum could float it out and see if it works.
Blum could do it. Yes.
Yes. And then if it goes, then it goes. It feels unlikely, but at least for this show, the RBI program was added.
And then they need to have like special guests like Chris Carter or someone just to like, this is okay. This is okay for Jeff Blum to say.
As long as you're standing next to me.
Dusty Baker calls in.
Yeah. They'll have one. Sometimes they'll have like a cross broadcast. So when they play the A's and Tony Kemp, who now helps the A's broadcast from time to time, they go back to Sacramento. Tony Kemp can be in there with Jeff Blum. And okay, I've given you free reign to do
Bo
that.
Where's Bo Porter? Can he?
You just pulled up names from Astros past. Bo Porter.
Just black Astros.
Yeah. Yeah.
I need them all to co-sign.
Tony Sipp. What's he up to? Does he want to co-sign this? I don't think it's going to happen on the Space City Home Network broadcast. Don't think Julia Morales is going to go from Doobie to the RBI program.
It's a great nickname. Bryce Matthews has immediately skyrocketed up the, like, love this guy power rankings.
Definitely.
I'm ready to spin the next, hopefully more than this, but at least the next 6 years of my life watching him play baseball.
Yeah.
And I'm in the category of when I see him in the, you know, mock trades for the deadline and they try to throw in like a Bryce, I'm like, you know what? I'd rather just not get this guy and keep Bryce Matthews. Like, it's just such a, you know, it's the Kikuchi trade. I guess it's Lo Perfido in the Kikuchi trade where I'm just like, no, I like that guy. I like that guy even though he's played four games for the Astros.
You mentioned a trade and Bryce Matthews, while not being
untouchable in my book.
There it is. He is the Astros' Amen Thompson. While Bryce Matthews isn't a name actually being floated, considering what we thought the Astros were looking to grab as far as an acquisition, if we go by Ken Rosenthal and what he thinks the Astros may actually be trying to acquire, maybe Bryce Matthews would be in a trade.
That's what I was thinking. Rosenthal, was it today or? Column last night.
Yeah, we'll talk about it when we come back.
Okay,
I'll explain it to people since we're already running late, thanks to, the previous show. We know how that goes. So we'll get to that. We'll hear from Bryce Matthews when we come back. Bryce Matthews, big couple of days in Arizona, helped the Astros win a couple, and that double play he turned, the bases loaded, and King kind of struggling, ended the game yesterday, and Espada was excited about it. Good to be excited about the win. Spot less so about the prognosis for Paredes. That one seems like a long-term injury. And then, of course, we already knew he was on the IL. The Astros add a 17th player to the IL. And I got word that Bryce actually did go through the Astros Youth Academy. So while it's not officially the RBI Academy, he was the first ever player through the Astros Urban Youth Academy to make it to the major league.
There
is some backing to call them the RBI program. Thank you, one Kevin Joseph, for doing crack research. He's my research staff.
Thank you.
Thank you for that, Kevin Joseph. All right, we'll go to break with that. We'll talk about Bryce Matthews, and hopefully he's not included in any trade package, considering what he's done. But if Ken Rosenthal is right, he may be a prize piece in a potential trade the Astros may want to make. We'll talk about that when we come back.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
Kane is in the building.
This is the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Del Olalea.
So I said we would get to the Bryce Matthews sound, but as you guys know, if you call in with your real name, we will we'll go to you first, and you can take the show wherever you want to take it. Then we'll eventually get to the Bryce Matthews stuff here. But let's get to Keith. He's got a question. What's up, Keith?
Hey, Dale. Thanks for having me on. Shortest wait times in the business. I wanted to talk about the LA Clippers. You know, the roster is obviously old, but if you look at the 10 deep, you know, James Harden, Bradley Beal, Kawhi Leonard, John Collins, Zubac, Brook Lopez, Batum, Dunn, Chris Paul, you know, Bogey. Like, that 10 deep is pretty solid. You know, the average age is probably 33. You know, I know the Thunder are the defending champs, but is it realistic to think, you know, maybe the Clippers are the 2 seed out west? What do you think?
In a best-case scenario, you are believing that Kawhi plays 60-plus games. James is an innings eater. He'll be available. There's enough talent there that you could see it. And if Kevin Durant gets banged up and misses time, that could determine where the Rockets are when it comes to simply the regular season. Will Denver go all out to do something like get to a 2 seed? I would feel like that's unlikely considering what they believe about themselves. That is all dependent on the health of their best player. If Kawhi is around and he was for the back part of the year getting himself ready to go, you saw the Clippers, one of the best teams of basketball in the regular season. Of course, they were the Clippers, and they have James, so we saw what happened in Game 7 against the Nuggets. I think there's a possibility. The question clearly will be, how hard does an old team want to go? Like, yeah. You talk about their age, that plays a part. Are they a team who believes they're situated to win a series? As long as they're in the top four, they think they have a shot to get to a conference finals, and they'll take their chances there. Age will play a part in how they want to attack the regular season. I think that is an understated part of how we judge these teams, and can they make a 1 or 2 seed? The Thunder were the not effing around team last year. They've been that way for a couple of years where no matter who was available, they were going to go hard, and it's part of the reason why they were so dominant. Does an old basketball team who believes they're built to make a finals run, are they going to be a team that thinks that way?
It's also a team that, like, the front office, like the organization, like you said last year with Kawhi Leonard, like, they're focused on trying to, you know, like a pitcher almost, build up Kawhi Leonard to be ready for the playoffs and to last in the playoffs, which he did this year. I mean, it was only 7 games, but he did. He played all 7 of those games against the Nuggets. So, yeah, to me, if you want to say they have a chance to be the second best team in the West, I'd believe that. But it's actually less likely to me that they're the actual 2 seed when the playoff bracket comes out, just because of how I think they'll approach the regular season.
Yeah. If they cared enough, I think they could be the 2 seed. I don't believe they will care that much about it. Be a top four, have home court in the playoffs, first round, and then go from there. I think that's how the Clippers will approach it. I think that's how Denver will likely approach it. Will the Rockets go all in? I think they'll manage Kevin Durant's minutes and games, and we will see in the games that he doesn't play if there's enough there to still win games when he's not around. And sticking with the Rockets, they did sign Josh Okogie, and of course, that name has been a name that has been around a long time. He's only like 26, but he's played like 7 seasons. I think he's been around since like he was 18, 19 years old in the NBA. So we've seen that name quite a bit. There's name recognition helps when people talk about him online. Josh Okogie is a irregular innings eater in the regular season. Like, he is not guaranteed a rotation spot night after night. But if he does play, he can be a good defender. And that's kind of the extent of what he is. He's not even a 3-and-D guy. He is simply a defensive guy. And he'll lock a perimeter guy down. That'll be his role. But when it comes down to it, is Josh Okogie going to play minutes in the playoffs? Can you roll out there and play 4-on-5? Probably not. So I wouldn't expect Josh Okogie to be anything more than a guy who can eat innings, as they say, in the regular season for the Rockets.
If he plays in the playoffs, something has gone horribly wrong.
Even better than Jayshon Tate.
Thank you. That's my question. It's like, I don't think Jayshon Tate's going to play much on this team.
Yeah.
And Jayshon Tate is better than Josh Okogie.
I would agree. So I saw people, can't believe they got Josh Okogie to what amounts to the veteran's minimum. He's fine. You want a younger player who can go out there and play if Tari Eason's banged up or you're having issues stopping someone and you need a point of attack defender or a wing defender. He can provide some of that. But as far as how big the move is, I don't think much of it. Josh Okogie at this point in his career isn't a real playoff player because he is a liability on the offensive end. And unless you're absolutely getting destroyed by someone and no one has any answers for him on your team, there will be no reason to play him extended minutes. In his last playoff run, he played like 7 minutes per game. And it wasn't an extensive run with the Suns. But yeah, when he got in for 4 games, he played like 7 minutes.
I saw something before the Rockets signed Josh Okogie where they're like, the Rockets are a playoff team. They need to go out and get Josh Okogie. I'm like, that doesn't matter. Like like you said, Josh Okogie, when teams with Josh Okogie on them make the playoffs, Josh Okogie stops playing.
Yeah, he played like,
he played a lot. I think he played 20 minutes a game maybe once.
He got to about 18 minutes. The Suns went when the Suns got knocked out in the second round. I believe was that Kevin Durant's?
That would have been Durant's first year.
22-23. Kevin Durant's been around. He got traded midseason, right? So he was there for that. And I believe that was a series where they got knocked out by the Nuggets in the second round, maybe?
Yes.
Yeah, because that's the year the Nuggets won the title. So he got knocked out. They got knocked out that year. And he played a little under 18 minutes. But the next year, he was down to under 8 minutes per game. That's kind of what he is. If you can't shoot, you're going to get played off the floor. Just because you can't have that type of guy being left open.
And even as a defender.
And not like, making the shots.
And even as a defender, he's not prime Tony Allen out there. You know, like he's a good defender. He tries hard. He competes, but he's not a shutdown guy. So teams, especially the Rockets. Like the Rockets are the team that has the most better versions of Josh Okogie already on their roster. Even before they signed Josh Okogie, we weren't like, you know what they need? They need a defensive wing. That's what they need. Someone in a game where you can't stop the best player on the other team. Someone just to come in and play good, hard defense. Like, they already have 5 versions of that guy.
Exactly.
They went out. They've acquired a better version in Dorian Finney-Smith. A month ago?
And he's a guy who you can at least depend on to knock down an open shot.
He was playing on a finals team.
Yeah, so it's a name that you know, so that's always exciting. Can't believe we only got him for that price. We got him for that price.
This demon.
And I've heard of him before, but will Josh Okogie get off the bench for a considerable amount of time if the team is healthy? Seems unlikely. Robert, you want to talk WNBA? Julian, I see you. You want to talk about the NBA regular season? We will get to both of you when we come back. See, we were going to do Bryce Matthews and if he would fit into a potential trade for the Astros, if they were looking to acquire a frontline starter, that can wait.
Yeah, Josh Okogie's got the phones ringing off the hook.
You guys call the show. You can take it wherever you want it, even if it is about the Clippers and their potential of being a 2 seed.
Yeah, I think it's partially the Clippers.
Yes.
Julian wants to talk about the Clippers.
He does too?
Well, the regular season, just like how we feel that we go, like, you know, we're not serious. We're not sure how seriously the Clippers are going to take the regular season.
Okay.
That's what he wants.
We can talk about that.
Sneak peek. Sorry, Julian, to step on your point.
Keep the trailer before the trailers, which you just did. All right, Robert, Julian, we'll get to you when we come back.
ESPN 97.5.
You're listening to the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Del Olalea.
All right, let's get to Robert. He held through the break. We appreciate that. Then we'll get to Julian. What's up, Robert?
Hey, Robert, I got a quick question. I mean, Dale, I got a quick question. I've been working nights, and my buddy asked me about the WNBA. We were talking, and I told him, I said, I don't know, did they go on strike or something? And then come to find out, they had a list of some stuff, and were trying to upgrade their salaries or whatever. But what I'm not understanding is do they not fall under the same category? Like when revenue gets raised, our salaries get raised, because every other company in the world works that way. I'm not understanding how they're not understanding that if they don't have the revenue, where is the money coming from, or did I miss something? And I'm going to just hang up. Y'all have a good day, Bill.
What's up? Appreciate it, Robert. Sorry, what's up? What am I saying? Appreciate it. I think the big issue is because of the new TV deal and with the CBA up for discussion, they want a bigger piece of the pie. So the reference you're making is about how they've been operating at a loss of the WNBA. The question is, do we trust what's coming out of the mouths of the same people who run the NBA when they go into negotiations telling everyone they're operating at a loss? This is the same pretty much the same group of people who will tell the NBA players, hey, money's a little tight, despite the billion-dollar TV deal coming our way. So who's cooking the books? What's real? What isn't? And then when you have a new TV deal for the WNBA that's going to be in the billions of dollars range, this is what the players are saying. Yeah. Even if we believe your numbers, why are you expanding them? If it's costing you so much money to run this league, why are you looking to expand once again?
And the expansion fees in 2021, the expansion franchise, well, I forgot which one, which one's the new one that came in. And
the Valkyries?
Maybe, yeah. When they announced that they're coming in, their expansion fee was $50 million. The new expansion fee when they're shopping, talking to possible owners to expand, now it's $250 million.
Yeah.
So the value of the teams has gone up by four times. Yeah. The salaries have stayed the same.
Yeah.
So if the valuation, if everything in this league is more valuable now, the players should be, or what the players are saying is that we should be making more than 9% of the revenue. Where, NBA players
is an even split, right?
I think it might be over 50. I know it was over 50 a couple CBAs ago.
Okay.
I don't know what it still is. Football in the NFL, they're around 50. And WNBA is at 9. So basically what they're saying is if everything else is going up 5x, maybe we bump ours up. And I'm sure there's other, quality of life type stuff. Sure. Of what other different things they want. I know it was a big deal when they got charter planes for team trips.
They got hotel rooms that were separate, like that. Yeah, so the WNBA is expanding to 18 teams in 2030. You're going to get three teams, Cleveland, Detroit, and Philly, and they're going to be added year by year starting in 2028. So if that is evidence that the players see, they're saying, you are expanding. How can you continue to sell the dream, at least for you, on the owner side, that you keep losing money? Why, if you're not profitable, why you keep adding teams?
Yeah.
So that is part of it.
Why have five different ownership groups been like, you know what, we should start an NBA, a WNBA team.
Even though it'll lose us money. So the evidence for the players is that you are doing things and you're operating like
the business is booming.
Business is booming. You can make money owning a WNBA team. We know what the new TV deal is. While the shirts make the statement, and people acknowledge that and people push back on that, I just simply say the finances are probably leaning in the player side. Will they get five times more than they're making? Probably not.
I'll tell you right now.
No. I would say they won't say it publicly now, but in negotiations, they probably would take a, hey, you want to give us 35% of the increase it from 9 to 35?
20,
yeah. I think this UFC is at 18 for the fighters. Hey, let's get it. Let's bump us above a league or an organization where their reputation is they screw the fighters over, and we're making less than that in terms of at least the cut that we're getting. So I think the momentum is likely on the player side, and they would love for more information to come out so the general public doesn't believe that any time the WNBA is brought up, it's a league that's failing despite all the actions to the contrary. Appreciate it, Robert. We'll see how it goes. We talked a little bit about not that particularly, but another issue yesterday when a lot of talk was about the Caitlin Clark, Kelsey Plum thing, and why do the players who owe all of this growth to Caitlin Clark talk about her that way? And I said yesterday, have you ever met a competitive athlete before? They don't bend the knee. They don't treat other players in the league like you would want them to be treated. Just because you only care now, if you even do care about the WNBA because of Caitlin Clark, they got to go up against her. They're not going to just simply go, you know, like, Caitlin's great for the league. It's great that she's here. And everything is going to be praising Caitlin. That's not how athletes work.
It also was about how no one on the
Team Clark.
Team Clark, which is how they break up the All-Stars. So what she was saying is half the All-Stars didn't show up.
Yeah.
And it turns into, why is she being mean to Caitlin Clark?
Yeah,
it's all the other people that no one knows, or at least the people the online public, who defend Caitlin Clark don't know their name.
Yeah, the name struck a chord, but she was taking a shot, playfully or not.
Team Asia Wilson, she would have said the same thing.
Yeah, it was the entire team who didn't show up for whatever reason. Maybe they had a party to go to. I don't know.
Probably.
Apparently a pretty fun time at the WNBA All-Star Game. We'll get to Julian here before we go to break. He wants to talk about the NBA regular season. What's up?
Hey, what it is, Josh Turkeys. Long time listener, first time caller.
That's a lie.
So can we agree that the NBA isn't as physical as far as, like, the way it's called? I mean, and hard fouls are now, like, you know, flagrant twos and things like that. Someone wants to be put in jail. Kobe and Jordan used to say things like, you never know when that kid is going to be coming to watch this for the first time, or things of that nature. So these players that are saying that these seasons are too long, it's wild to me, because now technology, as far as preventative maintenance on the body and, you know, technology and whatnot, it's so superior to back in the day. But yet they're always trying to figure out a way to sit out a game or to not play as much or whatever the case may be. If you're coming off an injury, I get it. I understand that you got to take care of your body. But some of these guys are just like, I mean, I don't know. Am I the only one that feels this way? Y'all have a good one.
No, it's a prevailing thought by a lot of people.
Yeah, a lot of people.
Trust me, you're in the, I don't know if the majority as far as the general NBA fan, but at least the online NBA fan and the people who call in shows who are down on the NBA point to what you're talking about as one of the reasons that they are. I appreciate the call, Julian. Frankly, it's a conversation that I'm not overly interested in, because no matter what you say about this, it's not really going to change. The players' approach is one that is bothersome to some. It is not bothersome to me. Understood. If you're a fan who loves, let's use Luka as an example, and you're in the Eastern Conference, and he's only going to be in your city one time a year, and you don't get to see him because he's on some maintenance program for a knee issue that keeps popping up, it's going to suck. And unfortunately, that is part, if you want to call it, the risk you take when you buy a ticket beforehand hoping to see Luka. There's always a real chance he won't be available. I've come to accept it. Maybe others haven't, but I feel like that's an argument that's really not going to flip the other way, where you all of a sudden see players who have injury concerns, we're just going to fight through it and play 75 games a year. I've come to accept it. There are some things in life sometimes you have to come to accept. And NBA players playing 75 to 80 games a year for the majority of them probably isn't going to happen, whether it be age or they've been injured in the past. Kevin Durant's going to be a prime example. New team, he's going to be counted on to be a big part of a team who has title hopes. Do I think I'm going to see Kevin Durant for 70-plus games this year? No. And you know what? The Rockets probably would be in their best interest for him not to play that many games and have him as healthy as he can be, considering his age, his injury history, ready to go for the playoffs. And if that bothers you, this is not me taking a shot at anyone that it does bother. You're well within your rights to be bothered by that part of the NBA. It's just not something that bothers me because it's been going on for what at this point?
Probably a decade.
Since the Spurs let it be known it's a thing.
That
maintenance was going to be a part of their plan going forward.
And that's the thing, is that it's like, it gets framed as like a players don't want to play thing. Well, it's also like teams don't want their players playing getting 82 regular season games.
Yeah.
Because if you're the Rockets, you're like, what good does it do us if Kevin Durant plays 80 games and then in the first round he's either exhausted or beat up and tired? I also, just the premise that it's a less physical league, like, I don't agree with that. It's more physically demanding now, but that's, again, topic for another
day. If you're not taking an elbow to the face, then I guess, or a hard foul, then I guess it's less physical. That's kind of, it goes, well, this is a flagrant too when it used to be a common foul.
How about you have to defend, you know, basically the entire court now? So it's just a lot more running.
Yeah. Bam Adebayo, 25 years ago, as a 6'9", guard 1 through 5, would be, he is a great defender, but would be one of, one maybe?
Of guys who could do that.
Of guys who could do that. Now you have...
Yeah, him and Garnett,
yes,
maybe.
Now you have several guys, maybe smaller than him, maybe bigger than him, who can do...
Yeah.
Now, it's still a unique skill set, but there are guys like Evan Mobley, who we were talking about as far as should the Rockets have taken him. Yeah, Evan Mobley, on a night-to-night basis, is guarding a 1 in the pick and roll, and then he's guarding a 5 or 4 or 3. Yeah.
Freaking Şengün had to do that against Curry.
Yeah.
like it just happened.
Yeah, how many times did you see... In, I guess, the golden era of basketball that everyone's likes to reference, the 90s, for people who have the same thoughts that Julian has. How many times did you see Hakeem guarding, I don't know, let's just say Mark Jackson?
Yeah.
Do we see that happen?
Bill Winnington was switching out to John Starks.
Yeah, it did not happen.
And they're clearing out.
Yeah. Everyone got out of the way.
Yeah. And then if you're the help defender, you have to start at the three-point line guarding a three-point shooter and then run to the cup to defend the rim, and then run back to the three-point line to rotate.
Yeah.
So it is just more running involved.
Yeah.
You move more now than you did 25 years ago when people like basketball. People don't like basketball now.
The sport.
People loved it when it was 75-65. I remember, because that was like, you know, in the 2000s, they're still doing that. And people are like, we love this.
Yeah.
That's why they changed the rules to open up scoring. People like defense too much.
You love Spurs Pistons in the finals, right?
Record setting.
That was appealing basketball. You have your likes and dislikes. It's fine. I just don't buy into that. For me, I remember Robert Horry knocking down a big three for the Spurs to just kind of decide that series. That was an ugly ass basketball game. It is.
And it was seven games basketball.
Yeah, it was atrocious, some of those games. Involving physical play, as some people put it. All right, we'll go to break with that. Jerry, you want to talk Astros? We'll get to you when we come back. But before we go to break, I want to tell you about Monument Chevrolet. It is a promotion they started last week, and it continues this week, and it is Car of the Week. This week's Car of the Week is the EV Blazer. You can get 0% APR on that 25 EV Blazer for 36 months. And if you love an EV, they've got the Blazer, and it's there for you. They have other EV models as well, but the Blazer, the luxurious EV Blazer, is your car of the week. You can check out all they have to offer at MonumentChevrolet.com. And once you see that inventory, find the car you love, whether it be new, pre-owned, or something for your business. You find the fleet, you find the car that you love, and then head out to Pasadena. They're off of Beltway 8 and 225 in Pasadena. They have a big time lot. In fact, you could call it a campus, because not only do they have the cars, they have a service department, they have a parts department, and the best part about it is you get to meet the people. They've been in business for over 50 years, and that means they've been doing a great job serving the community for generations. So maybe a grandpa's bought a car there, and then the son, and then the daughter. They continue to sell cars to generations of families because they do a great job doing getting people in the perfect car for them. So great service, great cars in Pasadena off of Beltway 8 and 225. And as always, Chevrolet. Together, let's drive.
The best in Houston sports talk is ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Del Olalea Show.
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Now back to Del Olalea.
All right, let's get to Jerry here. He wants to talk to some Astros so we can get back into that conversation. Calls kind of took us away from that, but certainly we got more Astros to discuss. What's up, Jerry?
Look, I just want to say that watching these Astros, it's nerve-wracking but fun. I go into watching these games now, especially in the West Coast, just enjoying my night and just no expectations. Just whatever happens, happens. And you know, you see Cooper Hummel making a great catch in the left field, and you see Zach Short. Even though he didn't get the out, he gets to a grounder that maybe Correa or Jeremy Peña gets the out, but I mean, he still lays out. He fights for that ball. When the big guys do come back, I am going to go to Sugarland and just go watch them play at Space Cowboys uniforms because they deserve all the love for all the hard work that they put in. And I know this is a side note, but the center field at Arizona Stadium, like, why is it built like that? I feel like no one can hit a home run straight center field. Anyway, thank you.
Yeah, it's one of the more particularly hitting to that part of the ballpark.
I think Walker had...
It would have gone out in, 28 of the 30 ballparks?
Yeah, it looked like it was like 3 feet too short because it's... I don't know. How tall is that center? It's like 30 feet? Like, yeah. It's a massive, massive wall. But yeah, it is. It's definitely one of the baseball stadiums where you're like, I'm not even sure where a home run is. Like, where it feels like you could hit part of the wall and it's a home run. If you hit a different part of the wall, it's not a home run. It's just very...
It was built out of time, much like Minute Maid or Enron at the time, where just wacky things were put in.
Yeah. I prefer it. Just being like, hey, in this series, some weird stuff's going to happen. Like, it's like not every ballpark has to be the exact same.
Yeah, and as I said, it was at the time where they were using ballparks to – baseball was using ballparks to show their personality.
Yeah.
Whether it be
a
hill and a pole in the middle like Enron at the time had, or where Chase Field does, where it has a deep, deep center.
They also have a pool.
And they used to have – do they still have the pool? They used to have the pool, certainly.
I'll double check if they still have it, but when I typed in Chase Field pool – was like the fourth one that came up.
Yeah, it was part of the.
Yeah,
part
it looks of, like it's still there.
Part of the reason, part of the way to get people excited about baseball was to do things with your stadium.
Accommodates 35 people.
Yeah, it's still there. Looking at it right now, you're right. The D-backs pool. Yeah, I remember that pool was fun. A home run could land in the pool, and that was supposed to be exciting, and people would dive in to go get it.
1998 was when Chase Field was built.
When was Enron built? Right around there.
Right, I think 2000.
Yeah, so it was around that time where Camden Yards is a classic one. But as the years went on, we got to do different things. We know in San Francisco, you hit a home run far enough, it lands in the ocean pretty much. So every ballpark at that time kind of found a way to make it their own.
I do agree with them, though, that watching the scrappy underdogs play, that watching Taylor Trammell play, watching Zach Short play, it is like, hey, I really respect the bar for what the expectation is so much lower than I'm like, you know what, I just respect these guys are out here grinding. Like, they're just, you know, if Chaz McCormick can't get to a ball in center field, I'm like, yeah, of course he can't. He's Chaz McCormick. But at least he laid out there, you know, he went for it, man.
Oh, we're talking about them like they're a scrappy underdog.
They are scrappy.
I know.
Underdogs.
I know. They're very scrappy. And
even like Cam Smith should still be like an amazing, like, I can't believe he's playing right field. And now it's just like he's one of the guys that were like, yep, Cam Smith,
yeah,
the cornerstone of this team.
Before the season, we were discussing like Altuve and Cam Smith, a couple guys who've never played that position before. They're just going to throw him out there in the outfield.
And even Cam Smith, it's also, can he hit on the major league level? Because he had a great spring, but he hadn't really played in the minors that much. And now it's just like, Cam Smith, leadoff hitter.
And the stats are put together that if you just combine the type of pitchers he was facing, it was rare that he was facing a major league caliber pitcher.
Oh, in spring.
In spring. And so there are concerns. And, of course, he's tailed off a little bit recently, but he has proven
that he looks like an MLB player.
Yeah, he can hit on this level. And at least the last couple of days, Bryce Matthews is showing that as well. I did want to go to break, but before that, we've discussed it, or at least kind of teased it. Ken Rosenthal has an article out about what the Astros are planning to do, or at least what they want to do going into the deadline as that continues to approach. And the thought was certainly get yourself a left-handed bat. Also, maybe a reliever is needed. But the Astros also are in the mode of planning for the future and the present. Because, sure, acquiring a frontline starting pitcher before the deadline is great for your potential run for a World Series, considering all the injuries, even with the apparent returns of Javier and Luis Garcia. And then you throw Lance McCullers on the IL, making it, the 17th guy to currently be on the IL. It's not just about the here and now. It's about the future, because the entire world knows that the Astros are unlikely to bring back Framber Valdez. And that sparked a conversation this morning. Lance is pretty sick and tired of the Astros not bringing guys back, and Framber is one that's kind of his line in the sand. Framber is a guy who's available, which is unique when it comes to Astros starting pitchers. You can throw Hunter Brown in the mix as well, but Framber goes out there, does his job, and does his job consistently, and does it at a very high level. If you're going to pay a guy, Framber should be the guy. And, of course, the Max Fried contract is one you can point to, because he got his deal either right before he turned 31 or at 31 years old. 8 years, $200-plus million. He's a left-hander. The numbers are very similar to Framber. And when I say that the numbers, 8 years, $200-plus million, you immediately wipe the Astros off the board. And the question should be, why? Well, the Astros have their philosophy. They know the last couple years of a deal like that to a guy in his early 30s aren't going to be good for the team. They draw a line in the sand. And that means you would go into next year at the moment not knowing, other than Hunter Brown, who can be at the top of your rotation. Of course, the Javier Garcia stuff will be determined when they come back. Are they the same guys? Can they pitch at a high level? So the Astros are looking. What would it take? It would probably take a Bryce Matthews, along with other stuff, to go get a guy who you would have under club control for a couple years as well.
Yeah, exactly. The if you're doing this move with an eye of your 26 rotation, then you're talking about a guy who's under contract for at least 2 years. That's going to raise the price. And if you're looking for a top line guy under contract for 2 years, it's going to take all the stuff, all the good stuff, all the prospects you don't want to give up. That's what the team will be asking for. That's what the other team will be asking for on the other end of that phone call. So to me, I don't know. I don't love it, just because the Astros, it's the same reason I'm okay not with them not paying Framber. It's the Astros are one of the teams that have proven that they can just go like, hey, Brandon Walter, how would you like to be a major league pitcher? By the way, we're going to make you pretty good at it too. Like, we're just going to make it to where you're an acceptable MLB starter, and they can do that with the Walters and Colton Gordons of the world. You know, even Yusei Kikuchi, who's been in the league, who at that point had been in the league for a while, they're like, yeah, but what if you just do, you know, a couple tweaks and he's untouchable for the back half of a season? It's like, I think if you can do that, you shouldn't really be paying premium price to get that kind of results. If you can make everyone, or make someone, you know, like the B level of that guy, I don't know why you have to pay a price for a talent.
I guess the pushback would be, for the most part, they've always had two A-level guys at the top.
And
then you can use your 3 through 5
as the
B-level, C-level guys that you upgrade.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe it's as simple as getting a guy, and of course it's going to be tough with just a couple of days to go, but I think back to Gerrit Cole. Gerrit Cole had talent.
Yeah.
People knew he had it, but he was not what he was in Pittsburgh when he got here, and the spin rate and all those other things. But he had moments, but the year he was acquired.
I was going to say, so that's a little different. He's like the, like, I don't know. He's like a step up from the Kikuchi
yes.
style thing of he was a guy who was a good starter, and they made him one of the best pitchers in baseball.
So can they find that guy?
Okay. That so when I think top end starter, I'm thinking of guys who are already. I'm thinking of
course
Verlander trade, even though those prospects ended up schemes. Not doing anything.
Yes, yeah, stuff of that. Not
I'm
that
thinking like
available, but
Grinky trade.
Yeah.
That I'm thinking of guys that are already established.
But can they find a B?
Yeah.
Who has everything? When you put them in the Astro system, becomes an A as opposed to a C, who they turn into a B.
Okay, I'm more open to that. I stand by what I said.
Understood.
At the start of the show, Bryce Matthews, untouchable. Cam Smith, untouchable.
I would hope so.
The RBI program, untouchable.
Trammell as well, untouchable.
I do have that question with the nickname of, can it be the group nickname if there's only two of them when the team's fully healthy?
I would say there's always got to be a Tito.
Okay. So there has to be a John Singleton.
Too old. Okay. Although he was a high-level prospect, but
okay,
too old.
It needs to be of that generation. Of that, their
and Trammell is actually like 26, 27, so he's old. He's older than them anyway, but he's not as old as John Singleton. Yeah. All right, we'll go to break with that. So the Astros looking for a frontline starter, whether that's an A level or a B level, it'll cost, particularly when they want club control. So hopefully they can find a way to get that done if that's a real priority, considering the likelihood of Fromber not being back. If they can get that done without giving up a big-time prospect, that'd be great, but that seems a bit unlikely. We will see what they do with the trade deadline approaching. We're going to break. We'll get to hour two when we come back.
Follow ESPN Houston on social media at ESPN97.5.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.